This is the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel, Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of Leviticus. And now here's Pastor Sandy in Leviticus chapter 11 on today's edition of Sandy Adams Radio.
Well, verse 44 is the key verse in this chapter. For I am the Lord your God. You shall therefore consecrate yourselves, and you shall be holy, for I am holy. And here's a great definition for holiness. To be holy is to be holy for God. Are you holy for God? With every ounce of your being, with every arena of your life, if you're dedicated to God, do you want to please and glorify Him with all you've got? We should be set apart. We should be different from the rest of the world. The Hebrews, in following these kosher laws, made themselves different from the other nations. We too should be cut from a different piece of cloth. To be holy is to be holy for God. Neither shall you defile yourselves with any creeping thing that creeps on the earth. And school is about to start back, and you high schoolers need to remember that you can defile yourself by hanging out with creeps. And so choose your friends wisely. For I am the Lord who brings you out of the land of Egypt to be your God. Notice God frees us to follow Him. Always remember that. God has freed us to follow Him. You shall therefore be holy, for I am holy. And verse 46 summarizes the chapter. This is the law of the animals and the birds and every living creature that moves in the waters and of every creature that creeps on the earth to distinguish between the unclean and the clean and between the animal that may be eaten and the animal that may not be eaten. Now, chapter 12 establishes procedures for a woman after she has given birth. Verse 1. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the children of Israel, saying, if a woman has conceived and born a male child, then she shall be unclean 7 days. As in the days of her customary impurity, she shall be unclean. Now, a woman's customary impurity was her time of the month. And during that time, the time of her menstrual flow, she was considered unclean. Now, understand, she was not morally unclean. She was ceremonially unclean. And before we go further, we need to delve a bit into the mind of the Hebrew. In addition to this idea of moral cleanness, they also had a concept that was different. It was ceremonial uncleanness. And you need to know the difference. You see, moral verdicts of clean and unclean were based on the good or evil intrinsic to the act. But ceremonial verdicts of clean and unclean were based on symbolism and typology. You see, nothing is sinful or immoral about a woman's menstrual flow. But when the Hebrews thought of human reproduction, God wanted them to recall the sin that had poisoned the very fountain of life. We are born into sin. You remember David said in Psalm 51 verse 5, behold, I was shapen in iniquity, and in sin did my mother conceive me. I've had 4 kids, and laboratory findings reveal that they don't like it when they don't get their way. And they kick and scream and cry, and they're selfish by nature. You see, sin has tainted the springs of life. And to remind us of that fact, to condition us to that truth, God attached a ceremonial uncleanness to reproductive acts. Thus, following the birth of a son, a woman was unclean for 7 days. She had brought a little sinner into the world. And God called her unclean to remind her of that fact. Verse 3, on the 8th day, the flesh of his foreskin shall be circumcised. Did you hear about the pastor and the rabbi? They were arguing with each other about who was most persuasive. And they both said, well, I tell you what, why don't we go down to the zoo and I'll try to convert a bear to Judaism, and you try to convert a bear to Christianity. Well, after, you know, one went into one cage, one went into the other cage, and the pastor was terribly mauled. I mean, he was beaten up pretty bad. He staggered out and he said, "Oh boy," he said, "that was really hard. It's hard to get a bear to believe." But then the rabbi, they had to rush him to the hospital. And he was just, I mean, he was ripped apart. I mean, he was in bad, bad shape. Wires running out of him, IVs flowing into him. And they came to him and they said, "Tell me, how did you do? Did you convert that bear?" He says, "Have you ever tried to circumcise a bear?" Well, on the eighth day, the flesh of the foreskin shall be circumcised. Now, why did God wait until 8 days? Why until the eighth day for the male to be circumcised? There is a practical reason for this. Scientists today now know that the blood of a newborn doesn't coagulate until the eighth day of life. And thus a baby boy would have bled to death if you'd tried to circumcise him on the fifth day or the fourth day. God knew that information long before the age of science. But understand, the circumcision was symbolic. You can trace it all the way back to Abraham. You remember God promised Abraham and Sarah a child in their old age. Abraham was 100 years old. Sarah was 90 when Isaac was born. At first, Abraham had trusted in his flesh. And you remember the mistake he made. He went in with his handmaid Hagar. And his own efforts, the works of the flesh, produced a son named Ishmael. And boy, has that been trouble ever since. But God proved his power to Sarah when, against all odds, he caused her to conceive and to bear a son, a promised son named Isaac. And circumcision became the symbol of man's impotence and God's miracle life-giving power. Thus, circumcision cuts away the flesh and obeys the word of God. Circumcision is a reminder that spiritual life comes from God, not the flesh. And isn't it interesting that the symbol of God's life-giving power was carried out on the eighth day? It was the eighth day the child was circumcised. You know, another example of God's life-giving power occurred on the eighth day. You remember, Jesus was resurrected on the first day of the week, but add seven before that. Jesus was resurrected on the eighth day. This is all laced with symbolism, chapter 12. Verse 4 says, "She shall then continue in the blood of her purification 33 days. She shall not touch any hallowed thing, nor come into the sanctuary until the days of her purification are fulfilled. But if she bears a female child, then she shall be unclean 2 weeks, as in her customary impurity, and she shall continue in the blood of her purification 66 days. When a woman bears a son, she's unclean 33 days. Add the initial 7 days, that equals 40 days, and 40 is the biblical number for judgment. Again, it was symbolic of God's judgment on sin and the sinner. It's interesting, though, that when a woman gave birth to a daughter, she was unclean twice as long, 66 days. And I have a theory about this. It could be that God is warning us, warning the parents, that that daughter is going to end up costing them twice as much money as the son. Why are you laughing? You've had a daughter, haven't you? Seriously, I was just joking. Seriously. I think the double penalty is an anticipation of the daughter's birth later in life. This daughter is going to birth a child herself. In other words, this little sinner I just brought into the world is going to end up producing another little sinner. And thus, the period of purification was twice as long, 66 days. Verse 6, "When the days of her purification are fulfilled, whether for a son or a daughter, she shall bring to the priest a lamb of the first year as a burnt offering, and a young pigeon or a turtle dove as a sin offering, to the door of the tabernacle of meeting. Then he shall offer it before the Lord and make atonement for her. And she shall be clean from the flow of her blood. This is the law for her who has borne a male or a female. And if she is not able to bring a lamb, then she may bring 2 turtle doves or 2 young pigeons, one as a burnt offering and the other as a sin offering. So the priest shall make atonement for her and she will be clean." Notice the turtle doves, the pigeons, they were provisions for the poor. If you couldn't buy a lamb, then you could bring the turtle doves, which is exactly what Joseph and Mary did when on the eighth day they brought Jesus to the temple to have him circumcised, they were too poor to buy a lamb, and so they brought the turtle doves. Chapters 13 and 14 give us laws relating to the dreaded disease known as leprosy. Some have called it the AIDS of the ancient world. It was a disease that literally ate away your flesh. Middle East missionary William Thompson once reported on an encounter he had with a group of lepers. He writes, "As I approached Jerusalem, I was startled by the sudden sight of beggars without eyes, without nose, without hair, without everything. They held out their handless arms. Unearthly sounds gurgled through their throats without palates. In a word, I was horrified." There were two types of leprosy in the ancient world. Tuberculoid leprosy was a benign form. It lasted a few years and then it went away. Whereas lepromatous was malignant. It was highly contagious and it produced severe deformities. And apart from an act of God, there was no known cure for this type of leprosy. Both diseases began with a white or a red patch on the skin, just a little bitty patch. The sore, though, soon became ulcerated and it spread, and the soft tissues began to deteriorate. The nerve endings were numbed, and therefore the tissues began to rot away. Appendages were literally eaten away. Leprosy numbs the nerve endings, and thus the leper often will accidentally stick his hand in a fire without realizing the damage that's done. He'll spill boiling water on top of him without realizing what's happened to him because the nerve endings are dead. Today, when lepers are treated, they're given a cat to take home. And the cat shoos away the mice that nibble away at the leper's feet while he sleeps. Doesn't know they're there because he doesn't feel them. Lepers are often called the walking dead. Today, leprosy is known as Hansen's disease. It was named after a Norwegian doctor who discovered the bacillus that causes it. It now can be treated successfully. There are medications for it. Because of the highly contagious nature of the disease, in ancient times, lepers were isolated from the rest of the camp. And as a result, they lost their families, literally, their businesses, their friends, their right to travel, even their right to worship with God's people. And thus, the proper diagnosis for leprosy was critical. There was much writing on it. And that's what chapter 13 is all about. There is, though, one other reason why this chapter needs to be of interest to us. In the Bible, leprosy is a type of sin. Characteristics of the ancient disease and our spiritual dilemma are strikingly similar. Leprosy is to the outer man what sin is to the inner man. It's loathsome and ugly. It starts small and imperceptibly underneath the surface of the skin. You're unaware of the damage it does. It's progressive. It gets worse and worse. It creates a callousness and an insensitivity you no longer feel. It stifles fellowship and isolates you from other people. It hinders worship. It can spread to others. In Bible times, leprosy could only be cured by a miracle from God. The same is true with our sin. And its healing was pronounced by the priest. And in our sin's case, our high priest, Jesus Christ. While on earth, Jesus often healed the leper, and it demonstrated his power over both the disease and the sin that brings all diseases into this world. Well, verse 1 tells us, "And the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, saying, when a man has on the skin of his body a swelling, a scab, or a bright spot," and here's some insight into what causes sin. Sometimes it's a swelling of pride, isn't it? It's a swelling. At other times, it's a scab, or it's a callousness or a bitterness that forms over a wound that we don't deal with properly. Still at other times, a sin can be brought on by a bright spot, a strength or a victory that we take credit for ourselves. This is how sin begins. "And it becomes on the skin of his body like a leprous sore. Then he shall be brought to Aaron the priest, or to one of his sons the priests. the priest shall examine the sore on the skin of the body, and if the hair on the sore has turned white, and the sore appears to be deeper than the skin of his body, it is a leprous sore. And just as leprosy is deeper than the skin, likewise sin, it's internal before it becomes external. A sin originates in our minds and in our hearts, under the skin, below the skin. Sinful actions always come from sinful attitudes. Then the priest shall examine him and pronounce him unclean. But if the bright spot is white on the skin of his body and does not appear to be deeper than the skin, and its hair has not turned white, then the priest shall isolate the one who has the sore 7 days. And the priest shall examine him on the seventh day. And indeed, if the sore appears to be as it was, and the sore has not spread on the skin, then the priest shall isolate him another 7 days. Then the priest shall examine him again on the seventh day. And indeed, if the sore has faded, and the sore has not spread on the skin, then the priest shall pronounce him clean. It is only a scab, and he shall wash his clothes and be clean. Now, in other words, if the priest has any doubt about this, he can isolate the person for 7 days. For when it came to leprosy, there was a rule: time will tell. Give it a little time. Give it 7 days and see what results. You know, here's a great lesson for us, especially when we're called on to judge the genuineness of a person's repentance. This happens from time to time. Has he or she really changed? Are they really willing to change, or are they just sorry they got caught? Are they sincere? Should I give them a second chance? We have to make these decisions a lot. Do we give him another chance at ministry? Do we give him his job back? Do we get a second chance at marriage? Hey, here's the lesson we need to learn. Time will tell. Give him 7 days. Sometimes 7 months. And at the end of that time, see what happens to the sinful, leprous-looking spot. Has it spread, or has it faded away? But if the scab should at all spread over the skin, and remember, sin spreads. It begins as a small spot, barely noticeable. But it's infectious, and it spreads. It spreads to other areas of our life. It spreads to other people. It spreads throughout the fellowship. If sin is not dealt with, it can eat away at the whole person. After he has been seen by the priest for his cleansing, he shall be seen by the priest again. And if the priest sees that the scab is indeed spread on the skin, then the priest shall pronounce him unclean. It is leprosy. Now, verses 1 through 8 deal with the leprous-looking patch that rises spontaneously. Verses 9 through 17 deal with cases that involve swelling and rawness of skin. Verses 18 through 23 address cases of potential leprosy involving a boil. Verses 24 through 28 cover symptoms that begin with a burn on the skin. Verses 29 through 37 deal with sores that appear in your beard or on your head. And verses 38 through 44 address sores that break out on a bald head. So when you get home tonight, let me encourage you to read through these various procedures and check yourself over for leprosy. Hopefully, we're all clean. But look in verse 45. Now the leper on whom the sore is, his clothes shall be torn and his head bare, and he shall cover his mustache and cry, "Unclean, unclean!" He shall be unclean. All the days he has the sore, he shall be unclean. He is unclean, and he shall dwell alone. His dwelling shall be outside the camp. If another person approached that leper, it was his responsibility to ward them off by screaming, "Unclean, unclean!" Imagine the psychological effect of replacing in your vocabulary the word "hello" with the word "unclean." That's terrible. You greet people, and they flee to the other side of the street. You know, people come up to want to show you a kindness, and you have to yell "unclean, unclean," and ward them off. Overnight, the leper became a social outcast. And this is why the diagnosis was so extremely important. You know, it's interesting that Jesus could have steered clear from the leper who approached him. Hey, he could have healed him. He could have healed him from a distance. He did that at times. He could have healed the leper by just speaking the word. But that's not what Jesus did. He wanted to reach out and touch this man that nobody else wanted to touch. Matthew chapter 8, verse 3 tells us, Jesus put out his hand and touched him, saying, I am willing, be cleansed. And immediately his leprosy was cleansed. For the first time in years, this leper felt the touch of another human being, and it conveyed to him love. Before Jesus ever healed his body of his leprosy, he healed his spirit and his emotions and his soul from the ostracization that he had experienced. Guys, Jesus still touches the untouchable. He wants to touch us tonight in a very special way and convey to us his love. You know, Jesus is still touching lepers in the world around us, but you know what his hand, you know where his hands are today, don't you? These are his hands. He still touches the untouchable, but guess who he touches them through? Through you, through me. We are his hands in the world today. Well, verses 47 through 59 tell us what to do if leprosy gets into a garment. You see, in ancient Israel, there was an active fungus that actually bred in cloth. And when this fungus was found in a garment, either the contaminated part was torn out of the garment, or it was washed clean, or in cases where they couldn't get it out, the garment was taken out and burned. But the fungus was never allowed to grow, for it could produce a leprosy. Which reminds me, what did one amoeba say to the other amoeba? Wow, he's a fungi. Verse 47 says, also, if a garment has a leprous plague in it, whether it is a woolen garment or a linen garment, whether it is in the warp or woof of linen or wool, whether in leather or in anything made of leather, and if the plague is greenish or reddish in the garment or in the leather, whether in the warp or in the woof or in anything made of leather, it is a leprous plague and shall be shown to the priest. And Moses goes on to give instruction as to how the priest is to deal with these leprous garments. But let me close tonight with an application to you fathers, dead. You are the priest in your family, are you not? We as fathers are the priest in our family, and it is our job to expect our kids' clothes for fungus and for leprosy. Now, my son can wear the same pants and shirt for months at a time without ever getting them washed, and so this might be very literal at my house. But there's another form of fungus and leprosy. You remember, leprosy is a type of sin. And Dad, let me ask you, have you inspected your children's clothes for any fungus? Have you looked at what your daughter's wearing? Lewd shirts, these low-cut jeans, tight pants, obscene t-shirts. You need to inspect your children's garments. Some of those garments need to be taken out and burned, like the leprous garment. I mean, some of them need to at least be eliminated from your child's wardrobe. Immodest clothes are also a sign of a growing fungus, and so beware. Unless you address their dress, that fungus might lead to leprosy.
Although much of the details you find in the book of Leviticus may be more than you ever wanted to know about sacrifices and blood, there's a reason why God wanted you to know and understand the things written in this book. There were things he wanted to communicate about his purity and his holiness through these Old Testament sacrifices. They pointed to a perfect sacrifice that Jesus would one day fulfill. If you'd like to learn more, we'd love to talk with you. Please feel free to give us a call here at Sandy Adams Radio. We can be reached at 770-736-2828. That's 770-736-2828. If you'd like to hear this teaching again or listen to other messages by Pastor Sandy, just visit our website at sandyadams.org or download our mobile app to stay connected to biblical teaching wherever you go. If you have yet to find a church home and you're in the Atlanta area, we'd love to meet you. Come join us this weekend at Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain for a time of worship, studying the Bible, and just getting to know one another. You can find service times, directions to the church, and more information at sandyadams.org. Just click on the church link under the About tab. That's all we have time for today. Join Pastor Sandy next time here on Sandy Adams Radio.